You'll see them flying in the breeze on hillsides in Himalayan mountain villages, and maybe on your neighbor's porch. Coming up, a clergywoman from Iowa explains what she's learned about those colorful Tibetan prayer flags and the meaning behind them. A former Peace Corps volunteer explains the respect he's gained for the tenets of the Muslim faith after teaching English at schools in Morocco and Yemen. And we'll update our view of Athens, the place I recommend for the Most Improved City Award in Europe. A local guide recommends where you can explore the one-time haunts of aristocrats and Byzantines in neighborhoods known for a more bohemian vibe today. I was in Greece at Easter time a few years ago and was impressed to see how families work together to prepare for the holiday. Even the children's godparents joined in as they dyed Easter eggs together. I saw how they added color to their extended families by keeping the godparents involved in their children's upbringing. For a look at what it means to be tapped as a child's godparent in Greece, we're joined by tour guide Maria Solis. She's a godmother to three, and as we'll hear, she takes her responsibilities very seriously. Maria, first of all, how did a British woman like yourself end up living in Athens?
Well, when I was studying at college in England, in the northeast of England, I met a tall, dark, handsome Greek, and the rest is history.
And you've lived in Greece?
Lived in Greece since 1982.
Can an English woman who marries into the Greek community be accepted after three decades?
Oh, absolutely. I was accepted a lot earlier than three decades.
Really? So you're part of the community?
Yes.
And that's an intimate part, because apparently people have chosen you to be their child's godmother.
That's right.
So what's the role? You heard in my introduction what I described in Easter. I was so struck by that. Did that resonate with you?
Very, very much so. Religion within the Greek community is, you won't find the churches full every Sunday, but it still plays a very, very important part in their lives. And it starts with the baptism. And the child is received into the Orthodox Church, receives its name, and is accepted as part of the Orthodox community. And basically, the role of the godparent is one of, like a sponsor, you're basically answering the questions that are being asked by the priest on behalf of this child. It's very, very important that the role is taken seriously, because it's a lifelong. This is something that you can't just take on.
So the friend, the religious friend, is there at the baptism, sort of supporting the parents and being part of the ceremony and formally becoming the godparent of that child as he or she is baptized?
The most important person, obviously, apart from the child, is the godparent, because the parents are entrusting the child to the godparent.
Okay. It actually, so it's more than in a Catholic or Protestant
situation,
because we have godparents also. But
true.
There's not the same reliance.
No. It stems back from early Christianity, when Christians were being persecuted and often they would be killed, and they would literally choose somebody to take care of their child, to carry on this teaching of the Christian faith.
So because early Christian was likely to be martyred.
Correct. Yeah.
I didn't realize that's where godparents came from.
Yeah.
So you have three friends, apparently, that have chosen you to be their godmother. Who are these friends, and why did they trust you?
Yeah. Good question. It started with, it was actually my husband's best friend. When they got married, they chose us as their best man and woman, their kubari.
Uh-huh.
Traditionally, it's the kubari who become the godparents of the firstborn child.
Uh-huh.
And that was how it started. And even though I wasn't Christian Orthodox, both of the parents got special permission, basically, from the priest that I be allowed to participate.
And you're Christian, but just not Greek Orthodox.
Greek Orthodox.
And the Greek Orthodox priest said, yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, he checked me out and made sure that
I was okay. So you've got three friends this way.
So this was it. So they were both Greeks. And then my second goddaughter, her mother is English and the father is Greek. They asked me to be godmother. Now Millie's grown up. She's going to college and they now live in the UK. They come over to Greece and I love spending time with her. And the youngest godchild that I have is Nikos. He's just turned 12. He's the light of my life.
Oh.
And his mother is Scottish and his father is Greek.
The light of your life. When you said that, it was the joy I felt when I witnessed the little girl running to her godmother and godfather in Nafplion when I was there for Easter recently. Just delight, love, having a child. So you said yes three times.
I did.
It's a lot of work. I mean, I said yes because, you know, there's no follow through. There's my world. It's just, okay. And I mean, I'm embarrassed about that. But in Greece, it's ongoing responsibility. What's expected of a godmother in Greece?
Well, once obviously the service is over, your main role traditionally would be to ensure that the child follows the Christian Orthodox faith, mm-hmm. that they attend the church services, that they attend communion. But it's more than that, really, for me. I like to take on the role with them is somebody that I can turn to if there's an issue going on with them that they maybe can't talk to their parents about. Okay. Or so it's really to be like a confidant, somebody that they can turn to if they're whatever their problems are.
Because parents have a certain role that understandably a child might not feel comfortable going
exactly.
to their parents. So the
exactly.
godmother or father can provide that. Exactly. That's a beautiful thing.
And then there's also, you know, you take on the role of things like, you know, Christmas and Easter and name days, that being there for their school parties and school presentations and award ceremonies and swim meets and all that kind of thing.
So. And just standing in at some of these Orthodox services, they last forever and you stand up.
That's
I
true.
I couldn't believe it. I
That's
was there true. On Easter and it was
yeah.
like, people have been here for 24 hours.
Yeah.
They come and go for
yeah.
a lunch or a dinner yeah. or something.
A regular service on a Sunday will last for 3 hours.
So
we don't stay for the duration, I hasten to add.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Maria Sulis about the role of a Greek godmother. So you're doing a good job, it sounds like.
I hope so.
Does every Greek Orthodox child have a godparent?
Yes. Yes, you have to have a godparent. It can be a man or a woman, or you can have two. But you have to have a godparent, as all Greek baptisms, there is a godparent. They're the focal point of what's going on.
Now, when we think about Orthodox, doesn't that just mean almost literally unchanging?
The right choice.
The right choice.
Yes, the right, yes.
So
yeah.
if it was Orthodox in the year 800, it's Orthodox
absolutely.
Today.
Yes.
And when you step into a church, Protestant or a Catholic church, it's had the Reformation, it's had Vatican II, it's had plenty of ways
Correct.
To kind of, quote, update.
Yeah, it's evolved, whereas the Orthodox church is. I often say that somebody from 800 years ago.
They could step in.
Absolutely. And nothing has changed.
Nothing has changed.
Nothing.
I think that's important for us as
yeah.
travelers to remember
yeah.
because we're welcome to step into a Greek Orthodox service.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to remember, don't judge it by being out of style or old-fashioned. It is, by definition, unchanging.
Absolutely.
And in a sense, that's probably one of the joys of Orthodoxy.
Yeah.
You don't have to wonder, do we still do this or do we do that now, and so on.
That's right. The mysticism is something that I think when you step into an Orthodox church, it just is all
enveloping.
An Orthodox
enveloping. Priest once had a good time explaining to me the importance of the incense, creating this amazing
yes.
environment. And
yeah.
he said he shapes the mood by which incense he chooses. He considers people who are not Greek Orthodox, he said something like, people who have not experienced the incense. There's some sort of a mystical presence created in an Orthodox service with the music, with the candles, with the icons, with the incense. It's a beautiful timelessness, I think.
I think that's exactly right. I think it's the timelessness of it. I mean, as a child going into a Roman Catholic church, there was always incense at
right.
the holiest part of the service. There was incense. And it's the same in a Greek Orthodox church. In fact, so much so that even in cemeteries, if you go to visit a grave in a Greek cemetery, you will take a little incense brick and light it on the gravesite, again, to, as you rightly said, this aura of mysticism about it.
British-born Maria Sulis has called Greece home for more than 3 decades. Right now on Travel with Rick Steves, she's telling us about the responsibilities that come with being designated a godmother for her friends' children, and also the Greek Orthodox traditions she helps to maintain in their lives. So you've been the mother, in a religious sense, a godmother, of 3 young Greek children. In what way have you contributed to their understanding of their Orthodox faith? What challenges have you dealt with them to help them grow up with a faith as strong as their parents hope they'll have?
It's been difficult for Millie because obviously she's in the UK.
Uh-huh.
But with Nikos, every Easter, it's very important that the child go to, especially the resurrection service. And a few years ago, Nico announced that he wasn't going, that uh-huh. he felt that he could get just as much from the whole thing by watching it on TV.
Right.
So it had to be explained to him very clearly that, no, I don't care what you think, you're coming with me. When he gets there, he thoroughly enjoys it. You know, when you're standing there and all the children and everybody's holding their candles, you've seen what it's like. It's just amazing on that Holy Saturday evening. And just to basically explain, this is, you know, the light of Christ. He's bringing the light of Christ into the world.
And that beautiful candle,
yeah.
it actually travels and it's lit and it
yeah.
travels from, I understand, symbolically anyways, from the Holy Land
exactly right, the church
patriarch
of the Holy
in Athens
that's
and then
right.
to the priests and then to all the
yeah.
people. When I was witnessing the cute little girl running into the arms of her godparents, they gave her the candle
that's right.
that she would receive the light
that's
on
right.
that Easter Saturday
yeah.
evening. And then they have the kiss of, what is the kiss?
Yeah, that's very traditional. It's when they say the Christ is risen at exactly 12 o'clock, you turn to the person and you kiss on each cheek.
And it was just, I was in the square in Napoli, and the square was filled with people giving each other this beautiful Easter kiss. And then plug your ears.
Absolutely. You've got the fireworks, the church bells, the ship horns. It's pandemonium, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, there are battle scars on the sides of churches from the firecrackers that are blowing off. Yeah. And I would think that's a real attraction for the teenagers there.
Yeah, yeah.
And then everybody goes home with their candles.
The idea is that you bring the light of Christ into your home. And I remember the first time I went to Greece, Yanni's mother, she used to have like a very, in the corner of the kitchen, a small icon stand with pictures of saints that she was venerating. And in front of them stood the little eternally lit flame with set in oil that she had brought from the church every Holy Saturday Resurrection Service.
So as a godmother, you're on duty. Well, you're on duty all the time, but the events that you're on duty for, Easter, birthdays.
Christmas, birthdays, name days.
So Maria, there's the birthday and then there's the name day. It's in a sense a second birthday, but it's what is the name day?
A name day is the feast day of the saint after whom the child is named. On that day, they receive gifts, but it's also common that they will also take pastries and sweets into school for their friends and adults as well. It's something that adults
celebrate that day.
The feast day of the saint after whom they were named.
Well, congratulations, Maria, for the impact you've had on three, I'm sure, adorable Greek young people. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been talking with Maria Soulas about the role of a Greek godmother. And Maria, in your role as a godmother to three children, what's an example of a moment, just a little intimate moment, that made you very happy that you rose to the call to be a Greek godmother?
Well, when I was asked to be on the radio show, I told Nico, I said, come here, I want to ask you something. I said, I'm going to be on a radio show and I'm going to be talking about being your nonna, as I'm called. And I said, what should I say? He said, tell them that you're a really good nonna.
That's a beautiful thing. Well, Nona, congratulations and best wishes.
Thank you. Παναγιά μου ένα παιδί, θα μου φύγει το καφάσι.
Λες καλέ δεν θα το δει και δεν θα μου το ματιάσει. Up next, we get insider recommendations for visiting the Greek capital, Athens. We'll hear about the different personalities of the city's neighborhoods that make it worth sticking around the city, even after you've visited the famous sites up on top of the Acropolis. And later in the hour, we get outsider perspectives on Islam and Tibetan Buddhism that show admiration and respect for religions that aren't your own. It's Travel with Rick Steves.